1-1 pitch. Swing and a drive. Deep to right field. Way up there. Way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Eight strikeouts for the King tonight and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Felix.
Strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager! That just happened! Thank you very much!
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
And it's time once again for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast. Gary Hill here. So it begins today. Mariners back to work after an off day yesterday. Two against the San Diego Padres. We'll look at those really quick. Then we're going to have a pitch count conversation. I had a question about pitch counts, something I've never really looked into in terms of, especially in Mariners history, pitch counts. And it's pretty interesting, and it times up perfectly with the conversation that Rick Riz had with former Mariners ace Mark Langston. So that comes up in a few minutes. Aaron Goldsmith, a wide-ranging conversation with John Paul Morosi. Of course, you hear him on Fox and the Major League Baseball Network. Great conversation coming up. Also, Shannon Dreyer, a conversation with Fernando Rodney. So that comes up as well. So all of that on the podcast today. First things first, the Mariners will take on the San Diego Padres, the first of two games starting tonight. 7:10 first pitch, Mike Montgomery against Ian Kennedy, and then tomorrow, 12:40 first pitch, Taijuan Walker against James Shields. That should be a really good matchup. So Ian Kennedy going for the Padres tonight. Kennedy, it's been more of a struggle this year for the former USC standout. He's coming off a really good season last year, 3.63 ERA, threw over 200 innings. He hadn't done that since 2012. And he struck out 207, first time he was over 200 strikeouts in a season. So an excellent year last year. This year, it's been more of a roller coaster ride. 4-6, a 5.09 ERA, 69 innings, 65 strikeouts. He's already given up 15 home runs this year compared to 16 he gave up all of last year. As luck would have it, though, Kennedy pitching his best baseball of the season in each of his last three starts. He's given up just one earned run, six innings, one run at San Francisco last time, six innings, one run against Oakland the time before that, and seven innings, one run against the Dodgers the start before that. So Kennedy pitching his best baseball of the season. This all coming after a blow-up against the Pirates to end May, where only lasted 3 2/3 innings and gave up seven earned runs. But he's been much better since then. So the Mariners will be facing a good one in Ian Kennedy. Meanwhile, for the M's, they're going to go with Mike Montgomery. Last time he was on the hill, all he did was throw a complete game shutout against the team that drafted him, the Kansas City Royals. And he has been one of the best pitchers in the American League the past month. In fact, he's got the sixth best ERA in the AL the past 30 days, 2.04 in his last five starts, 35 innings pitched. He has fanned 22 in that time. Opponents just batting 208 against him. He's got a whip under one in the past month. In fact, the Mariners have two players in the top 10 in the past 30 days in ERA, Taijuan Walker being the other one, 2.36, and he'll start the second game of the series. Of course, Lloyd McClendon flipping things, so the righty is facing the Padres, a lineup that is pretty powerful from the right side. Didn't want to have two lefties going against the Padres, and that's going to be the test for Montgomery in this one. The lefty facing a lot of righties, Upton and Kemp and Norris, and you go down the lineup, it is packed with right-handed pop. And it's pretty interesting, something to watch in this series and something I don't think everyone is quite aware of because of the reputation of San Diego and Petco Park. The ball is actually flying out of Petco Park this year. They average the fifth most home runs for any ballpark in baseball right now. Usual suspects at the top, you have Miller Park in Milwaukee, Yankee Stadium, you have Camden Yards, the ballpark in Cincinnati, and then Petco Park, number five, averaging the most homers this season. The ball has really been flying out, especially early in the season. It was a crazy rate to start the year, especially compared to years past. I mean, this is a park where there have not been a lot of home runs hit, and it's pretty interesting there's theories abound as to why we've seen so many home runs in San Diego this year. One of them, the walls have come in a little bit in left field, about 3 feet, also lowering a portion of the wall from 8 feet to 7 feet. Some people have talked about the climate is dry. It's been very dry there. Maybe that has something to do with it. Also, wind factors, there's been some building changes surrounding the ballpark, so maybe there's more of a wind tunnel effect at the ballpark. Of course, the lineup, last year's San Diego Padres lineup has upgraded massively, bringing in hitters like Upton, like Kemp, guys like that. And maybe the pitching, too, hasn't been as good for San Diego compared to last year. So all those factors, maybe it's all of them combined, has led to the home run uptick, the big home run uptick in San Diego. So don't be surprised if you see a few balls flying out in San Diego as opposed to years past. Okay, now we're going to turn to pitch counts. And this is pretty interesting. I had this question, let's see, a few weeks ago about pitch counts and Mariners' history of pitch counts and things like that. And this was perfect because Rick Riz had a conversation with Mark Langston, former Mariners starter, about pitch counts. Well, some of it was about pitch counts. Here it was.
We have a chance to visit with a former Mariner pitcher. And my goodness, folks, he was a good one. And now the voice on radio for the Angels for a long time, Mark Langston. Mark, first of all, thanks for joining us. But I want to talk to you about something you did very well, and that's pitching. You came up in 1984 with the Mariners and led the league in strikeouts as a rookie. Dwight Gooden led the National League in strikeouts as a rookie. What a year for two young pitchers in 1984. You've seen the game evolve and change. How has pitching changed from the time you came up in 1984 till now?
Boy, I think it's changed a lot, Rick, since when I first came up. Even back when I came up, we went deep in games. You were supposed to go deep in games. The bullpens really weren't as organized and as efficient as they are now. And I think Tony La Russa really, I think, changed the evolution of the way the game is played at this point. He really didn't have the starting pitching, so he started putting better arms out in the bullpen, trying to shorten the game as much as he possibly could, giving different looks to hitters. That's something that we had pride in. Dave Henderson, who was obviously, you know, played with the Mariners for a long period of time, and he was my neighbor, he used to scream at me. He goes, "You go out there and you pitch for as long as you can pitch,
as hard as you can.
They'll take the ball out of your hand when they don't want you anymore, or you'll walk off and you'll shake hands with the rest of your teammates when the game is over." So it was always, my mindset was nine innings every time I took the mound. I was never satisfied. If I didn't pitch into the seventh inning, because I figured a Little League game is six innings, I got to pitch at least one more inning than a Little League game. So it was it was pride. We had a lot of pride back in there at trying to complete what we started or go as deep in games. It's a totally different animal in today's world. Today's world, specialization, a lot of the great arms you see in the bullpen now would have all been in the rotation back when I played.
And now we have pitch counts, and it seems like right around 100 pitches guys are done, and I think it's really strange, and I think that's really changed the game. But in any one game, can you remember the most amount of pitches, your highest pitch count ever in a single ball game start? I remember one time you threw 137.
I think I had a game where I had either 160 or 170 pitches in a game against Kansas City. I do remember the game, and it didn't turn out well at the end. Actually, we had a 3-2 lead going into the ninth inning, and ended up losing that game 4-3 on some infield hits and some little odds and end things. So it was a deep pitch count, but we didn't have that. No. That was not a mindset. And the way I was going to be sore the next day, whether I threw 30 pitches or whether I threw 130 pitches, I felt the same kind of soreness. I had games, too, where I didn't get to the ninth inning. I had plenty of games that I was gone in the second inning or third inning. You got hit hard. But I still felt the same stiffness. So I really believe that they do baby these starters in today's game. They're cautious on the side of error where they're trying to protect these guys. But there was no scientific evidence that that is actually a byproduct of longevity, a byproduct of keeping a guy from blowing out his elbow. I think we've seen more injuries now since they've really put the kid gloves on these starters than we did back when I played. I don't remember guys blowing out as frequently as they do at this stage.
So I think it's pretty interesting. So just to put it in context, last year there were only two pitchers that surpassed 130 pitches in a game, A.J. Burnett in a game against the Phillies in July, and Cole Hamels threw 133 pitches against the Mets in May last year. So only two pitchers over 130 pitches. In fact, over 125 pitches is a pretty short list. It's only 17 pitchers that made it over 125 pitchers or more last year. So that gives you an idea of where we're at these days. Seemingly 100 pitches is kind of the magic number. So I went back in Mariners history to find the biggest pitch counts, the most pitches thrown in a game. And as you're probably not surprised, Randy Johnson completely dominates this category for the Mariners. So I'll run through the top 10 of all time. It's actually going to be the top 12 because a bunch of guys are tied. 150 pitches. That will get us the top 10. Mark Langston against Baltimore in 89. Randy Johnson in 93 against the Twins. Randy Johnson in 94 against Oakland. And Andy Benes in 95 against the Yankees. All through 150 pitches in a start. The Benes start is interesting, too. He went seven innings, 150 pitches against the Yankees in August of 95. The eighth most in 1990, Randy Johnson against the A's threw 151 pitches in 7 2/3 innings. The number seven, Mark Langston in 88 against Toronto, complete game, threw 153 pitches. The sixth most in 1990 against the White Sox in a 13-4 win, Randy Johnson, complete game, struck out 11, gave up 10 hits, threw 153 pitches. In 97 against the Royals, Randy again threw 155 pitches in a complete game. The fourth most against Oakland, Randy threw 158 pitches in 9 innings, struck out 14. In 92 against the Twins, he walked 7, struck out 13, and threw 159 pitches in a complete game. In 92, the second most against Texas, Randy struck out 18, pitched 8 innings, and threw 160 pitches. He threw 111 strikes. I mean, you don't get 111 pitches very often these days, let alone 111 strikes in the game. And then the most pitches in Mariners history in 95, July 7th, Mariners-Indians, M's won 5-3. Randy Johnson, without walking anyone, struck out 13 through a complete game and threw 160 pitches. So he did it twice, 160 pitches against Cleveland, against Texas. That's the most pitches in Mariners history. And I started to look. I mean, Randy Johnson just completely dominates the category. Now, you may be asking yourself at this point, what is the most pitches thrown in a game since the year 2000, bringing it to this kind of pitch count modern era? I would let you guess, but there is just no way. It would take you forever to guess who threw the most pitches for the Mariners in a game since the year 2000. It's actually a tie. So one of them is Aaron Seeley. That's not hugely surprising, I don't think. Aaron Seeley against the White Sox in 2000. He had a great year that year. 7 1/3 innings in that game, threw 133 pitches. But also, Bobby Madrich in 2004 against the A's, complete game, gave up one run and threw 133 pitches. That's the one that would have taken me forever to get to. But it's funny to look at it all listed out because Randy Johnson is just everywhere, routinely throwing 125 pitchers or more. Yeah, that was a good question. I'm glad I was asked that question. That was fun. That was fun to look at. So now we're going to turn our attention to another fun conversation. This one between Aaron Goldsmith and Jean-Paul Morosi. You hear him nationally on Fox or MLB Network. And here is Aaron.
Well, JP, it's a real treat to get to see you here at the Big A in Anaheim. And the American League West this year is, well, it's wide open right now. The Astros are in first place. Everybody else kind of hovering at or below 500. What do you make of the American League West as we approach the All-Star break?
Well, a couple things there. And I think, first of all, when a team starts out as well as the Astros did, they almost just have to play 500 ball the rest of the way. and they'll get in to the playoffs in one way, shape, or form. So I think, and you look at their record this month, I believe right around 500 again. So I think they've done what they've had to do this month to sustain what they started out with. I think they need to get some more starting pitching before they can really nail this thing down. I also think that the bullpen is probably a concern as well. So they're a funny team, Aaron. They've got high home runs, high stolen bases, high strikeouts, an offense unlike we haven't seen before. But you see a guy like Luis Valbuena now, almost around 20 home runs. So it's one of those years. But you talk about it, and I was talking to Joe Smith here over the weekend, the Angels relief pitcher, making the comment that the Astros remind him a little bit of the Royals last year, a team that developed a bit together and all of a sudden got good. So I think that they're maybe a little bit short still in the pitching area of things, but you know, Keuchel has been one of the best pitchers in the game. You look at the way that McCullers has come on and pitched pretty well from the minor league. So there's a lot to like with this ball club. And Correa, of course, phenomenal young talent. So I think they're a good team. Are they vulnerable? Yes. But again, they've got a pretty nice cushion right now over the rest of the four teams. So I think they probably have a better chance to stay in first place than maybe a lot of people think.
Scott Kazmir with Texas ties, somebody who's been at least rumored as somebody that Billy Beane could deal over to the Astros. Cole Hamels, of course, they've been talking about Cole Hamels going someplace before the first pitch of spring training was thrown. Do you hear anything on either one of those fronts?
Yeah, I think overall, Aaron, I do expect the Rangers are still talking to the Phillies about Cole Hamels. If the Rangers are going to make a trade for a starting pitcher, I think it's going to have to be an ace-caliber guy because they're going to get back some depth from the disabled list, they think, with Harrison and Perez, Holland later in the year. And so I think they've had their fill of third and fourth type starters. They need, I think, an ace maybe to really help them through the second half of the season. So I think the Rangers are a good fit for Hamels. I've been told that Hamels will not waive his no trade to go to Houston, so I think that possibility is probably out for the Astros. You mentioned Kazmir. To me, a little bit of a concern health-wise with him. The Reds, we know, Cueto and Leake are probably going to go somewhere by the end of July, maybe not in the near term because, of course, they're hosting the All-Star game. Ownership there wants to, I think, maintain a certain level of competitiveness before the All-Star game arrives to Cincinnati. So I think those are the names that we talk about, certainly. And one more name I'll add is Jeff Samardzija. You know, when you think about the way the White Sox have struggled this year, just has not clicked for them. They really they made a lot of moves in the offseason, including Samardzija, of course, being one of them. But they just have not lived up to expectations. So I think overall, Aaron, you may see the White Sox become a seller in Samardzija, a guy that, you know, his record's never quite been as good as you would expect for a guy with his stuff. But I think a guy that would be a good potential acquisition for a team that needs maybe a 2-3 type starter here in the second half.
JP, you mentioned Carlos Correa a few moments ago. We are in the midst of what has to be one of the most exciting youth movements in Major League Baseball that we can remember in recent history. Joey Gallo, another young player up in the division, playing in center field over the weekend for the Rangers. But then Byron Buxton, Francisco Lindor, Noah Syndergaard is having a phenomenal start to his career. Even a guy like Gerrit Cole is now suddenly in a Cy Young conversation. And here in Anaheim, it's easy to forget that Mike Trout's 23 years old. He seems like he's been a longtime veteran now. What do you make of how exciting the times are right now in Major League Baseball? So many young faces coming up.
Well, it's great, Aaron. And I think it's been said before, it's a young man's game now with just the way the game is played, emphasis more on speed, defense. And you just have older guys that are retiring at a higher rate than they were in the past. So I think that teams have become, I think, more aggressive in promoting at least their young position players. Not so much pitchers, but I think position players for sure. And then just letting them go. I mean, Carlos Correa has played every day for the Astros since coming up. Bryant, basically the same thing. So these are not players that the managers are being cautious with and resting from time to time. They're just playing these guys. And I think it's great for the game. And I think that helps, I think, engage younger fans too. They see players that are almost the same age. These guys are almost teenagers when you look at them. And Harper and Trout, of course, basically were teenagers when they came into the game. And it's interesting too, I think you see, Aaron, the path different players take, college picks versus high school picks, and the fact that as you talk about Chris Bryant, he's almost the same age as Trout, and that's why Trout is so remarkable, and Harper as well. Harper's been one of the youngest players in the National League for the last few years, so it really is, it's incredible to watch, and you have to remind yourself, and you look at prospect lists, and you see players that are 23 regarded as prospects. Well, Mike Trout's 23, and he's about to make his fourth All-Star game, so I think it's great for the game, it's great for conversation, Aaron, and I really think, in talking about Mike Trout, it's important for baseball, for this rivalry, whether it's individual, however you want to describe it, between him and Harper to really take shape. Yeah. Because you talk about the way we view our sports, and you go back to the 1980s in the NBA, and Magic had Bird. In hockey, Crosby has Ovechkin. You know, and now in basketball, LeBron has had Durant at different times, or Kobe, whatever it is. You need to have those foils, if you will, to play off a little bit. And I think it's important from that standpoint that Harper has been healthy this year for the most part. And he is an outstanding player to watch. And obviously Trout is phenomenally excited. He makes everything look so easy that he does. And I think that's the one thing that maybe we forget. I mean, you see the game on Friday night here. Just the number of things Trout did that made it look so easy. Yeah. So that's one of the fun things to watch, is a guy that is that effortless, almost, make things look so fluid and so graceful. Hey,
yeah, how are you?
Good to see you. So the fluidity that he has is really remarkable to see. So I give him a lot of credit for the gifts that he's gotten, the way he's put them to use, and it's been phenomenal to watch as a baseball fan the last few years.
And Harper finally faced a pitcher younger than him a couple of weeks ago. That just goes to show you how young he really is.
I love that note. Yeah, we were all waiting for that moment to come. I'm sure he was too. But, you know, that's a guy too, Aaron and Harper. Last year was a bit of a disappointment for him from a health standpoint. Production wasn't quite what it was supposed to be or what it was expected to be. But that series he had against the Giants was magnificent, and I was fortunate enough to cover it. The home runs that he hit, the way he rose to the moment, the controversy he was involved in with Strickland on the field. To me, that's good for the game. That's a guy that has an edge. And I think that's one thing that about baseball that maybe we – that we need to see more of, and I think would be great, and maybe people would disagree. The old school guys would maybe disagree with me. Playing with an edge is great. I don't have a problem with that style of play, and I think that it's good for the sport. It's good for the conversation. It's good to have a person that's divisive the way Harper is, controversial a little bit. I think it's good. It's good for the sport. So I think that what we saw with Harper last year was I think great in the postseason, and Trout obviously he had a rough postseason for three games, but it was only three games, and that's where I think when you talk about the discussion of, well, who's the new face of baseball now that Derek Jeter has retired, it's important for whoever that person is, and certainly it could be Trout, could be Harper too, that guy's got to be in the playoffs. Yeah. Derek Jeter was in the playoffs basically 18 times in 20 years or whatever it was. I mean, it's a phenomenal run that Derek had. And the fact that he was drafted by that franchise, they were in the playoffs every year, was a huge part of it. John Smoltz is going to the Hall of Fame this year, I think in part because he was so great in the postseason. He was on a team that got to the postseason as many times as it did. So that's a huge part of the way that we evaluate this game and look at the stars of the sport, is what happens in October. It's not fair from a sample size standpoint, but that's the way it is. And so I think that from the standpoint of the game, you're talking about the future of the sport, in Angels, Nationals, World Series in some respects, whether it'll happen or not, I think – That's the sort of marketing moment that the game needs at some point. Now, with all due respect to the Mariners, my pick to win the World Series this year, Aaron, as you know. We'll see if I'm correct here at the end of the day.
JP, it's always a real thrill to catch up with you. We love your work with Fox Sports, with MLB Network. Thank you so much for taking the time.
My pleasure, Aaron. Thank you.
And finally, let's give it off to Shannon Dreher, a conversation with Fernando Rodney.
Catching up with Fernando Rodney. And first of all, Fernando, it was great to see you out on the ninth inning. It was great to see the arrow last night. It was funny because you were just talking with the media, and it sounded like you were more surprised than anybody that you were out there.
Yeah, and when they told me, Smith, get ready for Pujol and Trout, this guy, I got in my mind he's going to throw fire out again like he do last week. I know, got in my mind I'm going to call back in the night and say, Rodney, in the game, I say, are you sure? But, you know, I'm preparing myself to be ready. I feel good to throw the ball well last night and keep working, keep throw the ball like that.
Six outings without giving up a run. You say that you try and keep everything the same, but, I mean, how do you approach when you see, okay, I am giving up runs right now? What do you look at?
I think a little bit the fastball in the location. That's what I think that they got to take advantage with that. But how they've been throw the ball like 5-6 innings, and I think the ball keep moving down a little bit more. Now I'm fucking dying. Watch a couple videos of what we've been doing at the WBC. It helped me a lot, and how time be time and take every pitch. And they helped me a lot last night. And that, I have an idea last night what I'm going to do.
Even a veteran like you needs to slow it down sometimes.
Yeah, slow down. I see that video and slow down. Nice, easy, boom, nice, easy, take my time. And boom, and everything go well. So last night I started trying doing the bullpen like a game, and everything go well so far. When I get there, I don't got any confused. Everything work the right way.
So it's not always automatic. Sometimes you got to think a little bit more about it.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, That's game is tough. Sometimes you got two out. You lost the idea what you're going to do, the hitter you're going to face. Sometimes this game is bigger sometimes, you know. They get bigger. And when you know sometimes what you're going to do, you put them more bigger. That's why sometimes they say, oh, that's tough to play baseball. And now I understand a lot of things, and that's hard sometimes. When you lost your command, the game going.
Yeah.
And you're still there.
You're still there without command, which is not a good feeling, I'm sure.
Yes.
One of the great things, and I know it's tough to see that happen, but the example that you set for your teammates is, I'm going to go to work and I'm going to help everybody else however I can. And it was that from day one for you.
Hey, they need me. I needed him. And the more we can do is work together, like teammates. We talk about the baseball. We talk about how you feel the next day. The other day I talked to Tommy, how they feel, and he said, well, right now I feel well, but right now everything work the right way I want. But just say, keep fucking, keep working, and keep trying, and trust yourself. And he say, okay. And then the last story he have, how any throw, he say a little well, but it feel good, it feel comfortable.
You know, that was a great thing. When he had his struggles, I saw you at his locker one day. I saw Mark Lowe at his locker. I saw Charlie come over. A lot of talking going on.
Yeah, we helped each other. Tommy, this great guy, Charlie Lowe, this great guy. They we talk together. We talk every time something happened. We all saying we need to help. We talk together and we figured out we need to help each other.
You guys are a team out there.
Yeah, we're teaming. That's what I like. That's what I think. It's more important to me right now. Teammate.
Last night at the end of the game, you did your arrow. Probably good to see Logan out there again. And then you did your high fives. Robinson Cano gave you a huge hug. He told me after, he was probably the happiest person to see you there.
Hey, say, hi, Ronnie. You know how long I missed that. The arrow fly. Now, you know, I said, hey, no, Robin, just keep working. We I know you. It's tough sometimes for us. Well, the game gonna still here, and we gonna still here. So just keep working, figure out the thing where we know doing right way, and keep working there.
Absolutely. Well, Fernando, great work on the hill, and great work out in that bullpen too.
No, just keep working. Throw a strike, Rodney.
Throw strikes, Rodney, and fire an arrow. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
A man all alone with himself, but not all alone here. As 24,000 incredibly rabid Mariner fans are looking for that final strike. That will set Mariner history. Here comes the left-hander's wind. The 0-2 pitch on the way. Strike! It's over! He has done it! High fastball, Randy Johnson being mobbed by Scott Bradley down to greet him and the entire Mariner team. Here on the 2nd of June, it ends at 9:51 Pacific Daylight Time. Randy Johnson with the first Mariner no-hitter in history, and they are going crazy. Everybody saluting the tallest man to ever put on a uniform in the history of baseball. Randy Johnson has done it. He has no-hit the Detroit Tigers tonight, 2-0. My, oh, my.
See you later.